Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Extended Hands of God Highway Ministries. We got Jennifer Morrison on here this morning. Jennifer is going to speak on current events going on in the world this morning, and I go to church with her, and she also does the prophecy class with Brother Dan Phillips that comes up here on Friday mornings. And good to have you on here this morning, Jennifer. I'll just give it to you right now.
Okay, well, good morning to everybody, and hello to the truckers, one of my favorite groups of people. This morning I'm going to speak on the topic, the world is about to change. Actually, the world has already changed, but it's about to change in ways that are going to be noticeable in your life. You know, a lot of things happen, and you'll think, well, that really doesn't affect me, and, you know, say like this thing with Bruce Jenner becoming Caitlyn, and you think, well, that's out there and kind of, you know, far-fetched for some of us is thinking, but it doesn't affect you. But some things that are about to take place are going to affect everybody, and that has to do with this Obama trade, they have nicknamed it, that is about to go through Congress, and it failed last Friday on the vote, but the Republicans have vowed that they will get it passed through probably this week, if not this week, soon. I was thinking this past few days about my mother, and I know I bring her up a lot, but as she was entering heaven in January of 2014, she had two or three times made a statement that I wish I had questioned her more on. I say that every time, too. But she had said, they think they're in control, but they're wrong. They're going to find out God's in control. And I have since wondered who she was thinking about or seeing in the spirit or whatever. Was, you know, she was having a lot of visions and what have you on her way to the other side. But my chief suspects this week are the Bilderbergs. And by that I mean the group that meets from all over the world. They come from 22 different countries. This year there were 140 of them. And this group, I'm sure you've all heard of, they've been meeting every year since 1954. And it is just like a who's who of the rich and powerful of the world. This year they met from June 11th through the 14th in Telfs, Buchen, I think that's the way you say that, Austria. And their topics, as they put them on their website where they listed the attendees, their topics included anti-Semitism. Let me back that out. That wasn't one of their topics. That's part of their personality. I looked at my note wrong. They discussed artificial intelligence, cybersecurity, globalization, the Middle East, European strategy, economic issues, and such. That's not a complete list, but it's some of their main topics. Now, let me talk just a minute about this group for those of you who might want to refresh your course or if you haven't heard a whole lot about the Bilderberg Foundation or group. It was founded in 1954 by Prince Bernhard. He was a Dutchman, I believe, from the Netherlands. But he had, in 1934, 20 years earlier, had been a Nazi in the SS, had worked in the NW7 group, and that group spied for the Third Reich, and then he also belonged to the Dutch brand of Knights Templar, which they're a militant arm of the Roman Catholic Church, I think, back then, if I'm not mistaken. And Bernhard started this Bilderberg meeting in 54. Well, he himself, as founder, also chaired it until 1976. So he was the chairman of it as well for 22 years. one of the kingpins of this group is Henry Kissinger, who wrote the book World Order. Now, this group, if you look at back at Prince Bernhard, the guy that started it, you have to keep in mind that during World War II, the Germans, if you'll remember under Hitler, had tried to unite Europe. That was their dream, was to unite Europe. And what Hitler wasn't able to do through war, the Bilderbergs basically did later through paperwork. And by that I mean they helped to found the EEOC and then the European Union. And they are a anti-Semitic group. They want to do population control just like Hitler did. You know, he wanted to get rid of any non-producers and make Europe all basically one big powerhouse area of the world. So this group has pretty much done that through the European Union, and by that I mean all of those nations, I think there are 28 now that are part of the European Union, and they do not have tariffs in their trade. Each country is able to have free trade, and they have the same common money, the euro. You've heard that term. I don't know if anybody's ever used those, but anyway, this group now has turned their sights on trying to bring this idea to a global stage. You know, the internet is being handed over from the United States to global control. That's in the works right now. And the Bilderbergs themselves take upon themselves to set up, I guess you'd say, the chessboard. And here again, they are very rich, very powerful. They include politicians. They include a lot of the kingpins of the tech world. You'll see people like Mark Zuckerberg on the list from time to time, Bill Gates, those kind of people that can make it happen through the computer world, the Googles of the world. And this group has got some big plans for you. They want exactly what Hitler wanted. Like I said, they want it on a global scale. And it is said that when President Clinton was being brought in, you know, Hillary and Bill Clinton were just little bumpkins from Arkansas when they started. They didn't come from a financial or any kind of big family dynasty like, some, you know, the Bushes, for instance, or the Kennedys. They literally were just two college kids that came out of nowhere in Arkansas. And Bill was good at talking. He was a natural politician. And so somehow or another they found favor with the powers that be, the kingmakers, I call them, that pad pockets to get people elected. And Bill Clinton's thing was NAFTA. Back before NAFTA passed, if you can remember the United States when we actually had factories and we made things, and I remember at the time of NAFTA, Ross Perot had made the statement that you would only hear just a big sucking sound, and that would be the jobs being sucked out of the United States. Well, that happened in my hometown anyway, in Duncan, Oklahoma. We had a Hagerslack factory that had always employed at a good wage most of the women who wanted to work around town that weren't school teachers or nurses, and I had worked for them 2 years and provided myself a living wage as a young kid, basically 17 to 19 years old. But that was one of the factories that I personally saw shut down, and now Mexicans or Chinese or whoever make the Hagerslacks. You don't see Hagerslacks manufacturing plants in the U.S. anymore. And so that's what NAFTA did for us. It lost a lot of jobs, a lot of manufacturing. That was Bill Clinton's baby. The Bilderbergs had favored Obama coming in and actually moved him around in front of Hillary Clinton because they saw some qualities in him that they didn't see in her. For one thing, his charisma. You know, Bill had charisma. Hillary doesn't have that so much. She doesn't seem to bring that warmth from people. So they saw in Obama, for one thing, he was a minority, and it would be hard to criticize anything he did. So that was a plus, and he was a great speaker, great teleprompter reader anyway. And so the Bilderbergs, Henry Kissinger himself, said that Obama had been prepped. They had trained even, you know, on what they needed done in the world for this global movement. And he was given a couple of mandates. The first one was to get health care pushed through, which they did by hook or by crook, as the old saying goes. And the other mandate was to get a huge global-like trade agreement through. Now, that's what's called Obama trade. If you've been listening at all, you know that this thing is very secretive. They've got it behind closed doors, and you have to be invited in to read it, even Congress. And when you go in to read it, they make you take in no cameras, no notes. If you do take notes, you have to leave them when you leave. You carry no notes about it out. The law itself has provisions for, I think, actual imprisonment, if not stiff fines, for even telling anything you've read in it. Of course, you have your usual leakers. And from what has leaked out about it, it's they say more about immigration than it is about trade. And by that they mean this thing looks to just throw away borders, much after the EU model, how the nations in the EU just trade freely across borders. There are no tariff charges or whatever. Right now the United States, say if we buy goods from China, we pay them tariffs when we bring their stuff in or whatever, and then when we take our stuff in there, they charge us to trade. Or maybe it's right the opposite. We don't charge it to them, and they charge it to us. But there's been a huge trade imbalance. And I heard a radio talk show host, Klickoff, he had done the research, and he was talking about the nations, some of the main nations that the U.S. trades with, and he went down through the list and talked about the billions of dollars of the trade imbalance. And a lot of the imbalance, not only the amount of things that we buy of theirs, vice versa, you know, that they don't buy of ours, but we also pay them all these tariffs to bring their stuff in. You know, they get paid kind of like twice. So we've just been shooting ourselves in the foot. So this has set up a good excuse to, you know, make it nice and fair, make it free and open to where they're making it for pretty much all the countries of the world that matter, that are in the trade zone of the world, will have a common money, a common currency. They'll do away with borders pretty much. You know, we've already done away with our southern border. And that's the model that's coming. They want to just move citizens all around the world. There won't be borders like we've always known them. Now, I'll offer in evidence a couple of things. If you look at Minneapolis, Minnesota right now, there is a huge population of Muslims from Somalia that have moved in to Minneapolis and the surrounding areas there. And now there's Lewiston, Maine, that it's one of the smallest cities that has received thousands of Somali refugees over the years. And they're saying now, just reading this morning, Minnesota's U.S. Attorney Andrew Luger publicly declared in April that the state has a, quote, terror recruitment problem. So what's happening is these Somalis that have been settled in the Minneapolis area, a lot of the young ones are being recruited to go work for ISIS over in Syria and different places. And so now they've also taken over Lewiston, Maine, so they're not just in Minnesota anymore. And this article this morning says that Lewiston, Maine is looking to recruit Somalis to be the police officers for this city. There's a statistic on here I want to read you. It says, the Lewiston-Auburn area now has a Somali population of 7,000, which accounts for nearly 10% of its total population. They arrived in the U.S. either as refugees or were born in the U.S. as children of refugees. And about a quarter of the city's officers will become become eligible to retire in the next few years. So the police chief says he figures to have quite a few openings, and he says we have to think about who is living here now and who's going to live here 10 years from now. We need a department that is reflective of the demographics of the community it serves. So he's thinking that the Somali population that's exploding, not just in Lewiston, but it's in nearby Auburn and Portland, Maine, would be a good place to recruit police officers from. So we've got that. They say that Nashville, Tennessee is just another example that has a huge Kurdish population. I was telling my husband yesterday, I can remember even in 1977 through 1979, the years that I worked at Hagerslacks before NAFTA sucked it away, we worked with a great number of Vietnamese refugees that the United States had brought in. The government had brought them in, bought them a new car, put them in housing, and that's another thing they're talking about, these that they're bringing in now. They'll put them in one city, and then they figure out that the welfare benefits are better in another state, and they move on, so they're just pretty much anywhere they want to be in this country. So this Obama trade bill that has been so secretive, WikiLeaks, I can't say that, they have put a bounty out, you know, for anybody that can get information. They've got quite a bit already leaked, I think 17 pages of it or whatever. But the people who have read it that have been willing to leak it just say that it's going to cost the U.S. so many jobs, just like NAFTA took away our manufacturing. This thing is going to take away service jobs, and I think that is the TISA part of a trade and services agreement. What they're voting on that went down Friday is the TPA, which is what's called Fast Track, and that's the domino that helps all the others fall, because it gives the president almost a dictatorial authority to not have to go to Congress to be able to enter into trade agreements with just whoever. And so you envision a world where suddenly everybody along the Pacific Rim will be set equal with us, and we just all trade with the same money, whatever that is going to be, just like the euro was in Europe. They'll set some money to where the whole world can be on that same setup, and they'll forget tariffs and all these different charges, taxes, whatever, and we will trade with all these nations just as though we were trading within the United States borders, you know, between Oklahoma and Texas or between a couple of our states, you know, just it's like we're really making it global. Now, the mass immigration, the job losses, the currency change, throwing away the borders, all of this is, you know, a tax hike, they're saying, is in there. But one of the big things that's leaking out, and we'll wait to see, you know, because Boehner said, well, we got to pass it and then we can read it. It's kind of like the Obamacare thing. Obama trade is a pass first and read later type document. But they're saying that there's an identification system in there, and who knows what that will be. I don't. I've heard rumblings. You know, you hear some people think it's going to be some type of chip. But for years, people would ask me, why don't they build the border on the southern border? Well, it was years ago that you heard that, well, they're not going to build fences. They're going to build technological fences in the world. By that I mean, you know, you go out here to keep your dog in and you don't want to build a wooden fence, so you put an electronic thing through the air, and when the dog gets in that area, it shocks him, and he learns not to go past there after a few shocks, and then you can basically turn the fence off and he'll never try it again. It's kind of that way. It's not that they're going to put shock fences up, I don't mean that, but I'm saying technologically they will control and know who's where, who's supposed to be what country working, and you know, they're going to keep up with the bad guys and the good guys, and whoever gets to decide who's good and who's bad, you know, will probably not be conservative Christian people, but they'll control the population. Now, just like the Germans wanted to create a super state and control Europe, unite Europe, and eventually control the world, you know, Hitler had a model that you use whoever you need to use to get in power, and by that it was, you know, homosexuals, just whoever. He then slaughtered them. That was a picture of what the Antichrist is going to do. You know, Dan teaches that, but the Antichrist will rise on the back of the false church, the apostate church, get in power, get their wealth, get their influence, and then slaughter them. He'll turn on them. And so I think that's what's happening here. You know, we've seen food stamps go crazy. SSI checks go crazy. We're just spending money like there's no tomorrow. And that is one way to change the money system. People will say, well, how can we ever pay this $18 trillion debt back that's growing? I think it's something like $500 million a day. You know, how will we ever pay this back? Well, I've been saying for years they don't intend to pay it back. It's a thing that's been planned on purpose. It follows a model for their plan to globalize everything. They get so many countries bankrupt. And by the way, right now, across the world, and this isn't just the United States, but across the world, the average debt, personal debt, for you, for me, for our kids, for the kids in Somalia, for the kids in, you know, Kenya, for every living, breathing human being, there is so much debt in this world by all countries, not just ours. They said that the average per person is $28,000. So, you know, if your total debt to the powers that be is $28,000, and you live in a country like ours, and you make, say, $100,000, $150,000, some people make a lot more than that, you're thinking, well, $28,000 isn't so bad. But you got to keep in mind the kid on the street in Somalia that don't have shoes or clothes or food half the time, his part of it's $28,000 as well, and we know they're not going to be able to pay that. So what's coming next, and I think it may be part of this Obama trade thing too, or a piece that's added afterwards with his pen and phone, you know, he'll have the power just to do that without Congress, and that will be something that he's always expressed he wanted to do, to redistribute the wealth. And when you get so many people that are uber wealthy like we have now, and there's such a divide, you know, and Hillary Clinton is even, I heard her yesterday, campaigning on this wealth inequality, income inequality. By these trade agreements, we've lost so much of the middle class, you know, our refineries, our factories, where the middle class used to work to make their money. That's just not here. So you have the very poor that depend on government subsidies and working at McDonald's or wherever, and then you have the rich people, and by that I mean usually business owners that have done well in their businesses and made themselves wealthy. So we've just ended up with two classes, kind of your Wall Street class that invests all their money and they grow their money and they expand their businesses, and then you have no middle class much, and then you drop down to these very poor people that are on food stamps and Medicaid, et cetera. The idea is to bring everybody equal. So that will be done most likely by freezing some of the money in banks. Now, when that is done, there's going to be a lot of anger. If you've worked hard and you've got a business and you're used to living pretty nice and in a gated community, and suddenly the government comes out and says, well, we've got to make things more fair. You know, we've got all this debt we've got to pay off, and obviously these poor people can't pay it. We've got to have the rich people's money, the private money, not just tax money, but the private wealth. You're going to see them freeze, in my opinion, and I think it's part of this trade thing, that they will go to the private wealth and freeze over a certain amount of it. Well, that's going to make a lot of people absolutely take up arms, in my guesstimate. I think you'll see almost like a civil war of the haves and have-nots, because when the powers that be freeze that money and start to give it away, put it into other people's funds, you know, it's going to be ugly. And I think that there will probably be a lot of civil unrest. The government is already making plans, and they're set up. They're doing drills in some of the southern states to be able to handle that kind of thing. You know, for a while, conspiracy theories have gone around about how they have caskets piled up in different places, and people have wondered why. Well, I don't know, but I do know that the Army, just as of last week, it was shown that someone had found a post for a job, and the description of the job was to be able to handle, like, civil emergency situations, you know, population problems or whatever. So they're building their system for controlling the ones that rise up about it. And you may be taken off to jail if you don't sit down and shut up fast enough and give your money to them like they want. You could disappear. You know, they said that our laws now, for the first time in history, make it possible to disappear someone, as they call it, where they just come get you in the middle of the night and your family doesn't really know where they took you and has a hard time finding out. And this all sounds like something out of a bad horror movie, but I'm just telling you, in the next few months, you're going to see legislation come through that's going to just blow your mind. If you thought the Obamacare bill was put through crazy and came up with crazy ideas, and by the way, it created databases. I think I saw in the news just yesterday, Obamacare has created personal information databases on us that they say will last forever. They will never be deleted. Our personal information, they've got it through the Obamacare. Well, Obamacare is going to go so much farther, and I think you'll feel a difference in your personal life a lot faster. Now, they say if you're rich, you're going to feel it a whole lot harder than if you have nothing to start with. But the overall plan here, again, is back to, it's nothing more than Hitler's model was. It uses the poor. Like right now, if you go to the food stamp office, you will see the flyers. They say, here, right here, take this and sign up and give us about two or three lines of information, and you can vote and be sure and vote. You know, we'll give you a ride down here to vote if you need to make sure your food stamps are going to be here. You know, so they really use the poor and the people that don't produce to vote them into power. Now, Hitler was that same way. He used groups that he knew he didn't want long-term, and then the homosexuals were one of them. I mentioned that a while ago. Just like Obama has really courted their vote and used them to get rid of Christianity. When Hitler wanted to unite Germany, he really didn't want to have any Christianity or religious affiliations per se. He wanted the state to be God. And that's why you're seeing Christianity purged from the United States, is because in this global system, they say that wars are fought over religion, and so they're trying to get rid of religion. Now, what they're going to do about the Muslims, here again, I think they use the Muslims just like they're using homosexuals and a lot of the poor. That is not really in their long-term plan. I think after the reason that the Bilderbergs wanted Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama at the helm to pass Obamacare was to get the health care. Now, once they've got all the health care, if you think about it, you come along in Obama trade, and it sets up this big socialistic system to try to equalize the nations. And if you thought our factories leaving was bad, well, this trade and services agreement is going to take our service jobs, you know, computer programming, all those kind of things, to other countries because, you know, let's face it, the East Indians have come over here and taken over Sprint. I saw that firsthand when I was a programmer. I had to always say they're just eating up with them, you know. And so we're going to lose our services to countries that will do it for a lot less money. So that's why I say the, quote, rich in this country that are used to making good money and living in gated communities are going to find themselves bankrupt and having to go to one of these government high-rises that you're seeing go up all over the place. And people's lifestyles are going to change. By having the Obamacare in place first, this will allow them to, where Hitler did gas ovens, which, of course, is just, I say that, I'm just, it just makes me cry almost. I can't hardly stand to remember the way he got rid of people. We may not see that type of getting rid of people, but with Obamacare, you think about people that are poor, that go to these places, you know, the emergency rooms over and over with chronic conditions. There are people that are on disability. They don't produce. They don't pay taxes. They just draw from the system. I think the way they're going to annihilate, for better word, these people is just to deny them care. You know, they're already saying, well, Obamacare's in trouble. It's going broke. It's not, you know, things. Well, that's going to play to their advantage because at some point they're going to say, like Zeke Emanuel, the architect, you know, Rahm Emanuel's brother that was the architect of Obamacare, he's always said, well, you get your best care between the ages of 15 and 40. So a lot of these young kids, like I see over here at the public school, that as sad as it is, there's a group of them that are in wheelchairs. Some of these kids do well to grunt at you. You know, they understand kind of what you're telling them, but they can't even communicate. They've got straps trying to hold them upright in a chair. Some of them have a thing holding, you know, their head up, just keep it up because they have no muscle control. They sit and pretty much drool and, you know, grunt at you all day. That's pretty much their life. The state pays somebody to push them around in the wheelchair, try to stimulate them, wipe the drool. And I don't mean to be graphic, but that's what you see. If you followed me around, I could show you that. I told my husband, I said, you know, just as soon as this big trade thing goes in, we're trying to set this global utopian society up, you know, get rid of religion and everybody's going to have a job and there won't be any rich and poor or whatever. They're going to make it all, quote, fair. Anybody that's not producing and just being a drag on the system, they now have the healthcare system set there to where they just deny care. You know, they've already cut back on Medicare and Medicaid and all these different things. So what will happen is people that are the unwanteds just won't be given care when they show up at the hospital. If they're in some horrible state about to die off, they'll probably give them palliative care. You know, in other words, like Obama said, just give grandma a pill and get her out of her misery easy. But they're not going to let older people have hip replacements, heart transplants, things like that. They're not going to spend a bunch of money. They'll just give you the minimal, you know, pain medicine or whatever to get you out of your misery. And these children that sit in wheelchairs drooling, the state will cease to pay for them, for someone to push them around in the wheelchair and try to teach them how to recognize a certain color from the other one. You know, even though they're 20 years old, that's the level of teaching they're getting. I think that'll disappear. I think it'll be done a different way than what Hitler did it, but their ideas are still the same. Keep in mind, Bilderberg was formed by a guy that had Nazi idealism. So we're about to see this. I mean, just they're wanting it in by July 4th, just right here on us. And another thing that is about to happen, the Shemitah year, if you have followed Jonathan Cahn. He wrote the book on the Harbinger and then talks about the Shemitah year. And that ends September 13th. And, of course, a lot of the wealth on Wall Street is owned by the Jewish people. And God has not been happy with them for not letting the land rest, so to speak. And the last two Shemitah years, they're every 7 years. In 2001, the stock market fell a huge amount following the 9/11 attacks. You know, it was closed, and then when it reopened, it was way down. I can't remember the percentage now. I've got that in my notes somewhere, but I can't get to it right now. But it was one of the biggest falls in one time, you know, ever. And then 7 years later, at the end of the Shemitah year, is when the Lehman Brothers organization declared bankruptcy and the government didn't bail them out, and that set off the housing collapse. And we've really never recovered from right there at the end of Bush's term. Our economy's never been the same. You know, they passed that big stimulus bill and what have you, but it's, I know the housing on our very street, we are way upside down as far as what we gave for the house. And a lot of people, it depends on which area you live in, but housing just has still never recovered. The houses that we're buying and selling for $160,000 to $200,000 in my area, I've seen them sell for $98,000, $105,000. There are three up for sale right now. One of them just went for $98,000. So you can see the difference. You know, it's like half of what it was when we bought them in 2005 in that area. So this year ends, the Shemitah year ends the 13th of September. By then, Obama trade will have been passed. By then, the United States Supreme Court will have decided on gay marriage, and most people expect them to make it the law of the land. The Internet will have been handed off to global control, and the databases of the world will be shared. That's part of Obama trade. Your information won't be just held by U.S. corporations anymore. It will be in a global database. So, yeah, things are about to change big time. And in the Middle East, they're changing too, as we know, you know, between the ISIS group, and which are Sunnis, and the Iranian group, which is the Shiites. And I'll leave you with this thought, and we'll all talk. In 2005, a Lebanese journalist named Fahad Hussein published details of an al-Qaeda 20-year plan that had been leaked to him by al-Qaeda members. This plan had seven phases, and it culminates in what's called definitive victory in the year 2020. Now, it started in 2000, and they looked at, you know, in 20 years to go from, well, in 2001, of course, they hit the trade centers, but it was published in 2000, supposed to end in 2020 with seven phases. Now, interestingly enough, the fifth place or phase of the plan, which al-Qaeda projected would unfold between 2013 and 2016, and how many of you know we're in that window right now? For that window of time, their plan was to, and this is a quote, to establish an Islamic state or caliphate. In 2014, ISIS, which of course is an al-Qaeda offshoot, did exactly that. On June 29, 2014, they declared the caliphate of Iraq, is the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. They control a good area of both of those nations, and they've been going down through the cities that sit along the Euphrates River and taking them. They first appeared in Fallujah, Iraq, took it in short order in January of 2014. That happened as the very month my mother died, and I remember not paying a lot of attention to it right then because I was ministering to her. But by the time her death had happened and I looked around, it was like, wow, what's this ISIS group? Now, this was the same month that Obama had called them the JV team, you know, but they took Fallujah. And then by June, when they took Mosul, which was the second largest city in Iraq, that's when they made their announcement that the caliphate is here. The caliph himself declared himself to be the head of it. And so that was their fifth item on this seven-phase plan. We now appear to be moving toward the sixth phase, the next to the last phase, which they call total confrontation, in which Al-Qaeda anticipates an all-out war with the unbelievers between the years 2016 and 2020. So your world's about to change because of Obama trade, but your world's also about to change. You know, we've seen a couple of attacks already that ISIS has claimed here in the States, and their idea is to get into a virtual guerrilla war in American and European cities. You know, I've encouraged people always that I've talked to be ready, you know, have water, have food, have protection, whatever you feel like you need. But these guys are, you know, a lot of their little lone wolf guys that just show up, you don't see them coming, you know. It's not like you expect to see an army roll into town. You might just see one, like the Dallas Police Department, you know, had one armored vehicle. And I haven't even been listening to the news enough the last 2 days to know if that was anything to do with ISIS. But I do know the guy had said he was mad because they had declared him a terrorist. So it sounded like he was one. I think they had it right. But if you look at the leader of this caliphate that they've declared, in a book by Eric Stackelback, who is a reporter that has gone dug deep into ISIS and their founding and what they're up to, he writes something really interesting about the man who has declared himself to be the caliph, the head, the messiah or whatever, over this ISIS group. And I would like to read what this man has written about him. It's got some terms in here that kind of gave me goosebumps, to be honest with you. His name is Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. A lot of people just refer to him as Baghdadi. But here's how he's described. Bookish, quiet, bespectacled, pious, a fine soccer player, a family man. Judging by the accounts of those who knew him before the U.S. invasion of Iraq back in 2003, this bloodthirsty fanatic who would one day declare himself leader of the world's Muslims, become the most wanted jihadist on the planet, and direct the most powerful, vicious terrorist organization in memory, was, in a word, unimpressive. Little is known of the background of ISIS leader and self-declared caliph Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, but the scant information that is available about his early days does not suggest a budding terrorist mastermind. Reportedly born in 1971, he's younger than my little brother, so he's, what would that make him, 44 years old. He was raised just north of Baghdad in the town of Samarra in Iraq's Sunni heartland. Baghdadi was an introverted loner as a child. He was described as studious, pious, and calm. He was focused on Islam and soccer, where he excelled playing for a team sponsored by his local mosque. At the age of 18, Baghdadi moved to the Iraqi capital to study Islam, eventually earning a Ph.D. in Sharia law from Baghdad's Islamic University. For a decade, he lived among both Sunnis and Shias in the rundown neighborhood of Tobchi on the western edge of the city. He married, had children, and apparently showed no overt signs of rabid extremism, magnetic charisma, or bold leadership. Perhaps Baghdadi was, as one former acquaintance mused, quote, a quiet planner who was merely waiting for the right moment to burst onto the world stage and implement a carefully crafted ideology that would enslave millions. He helped organize a jihadist group called Jaish al-Sunnah al-Jamal, following the U.S. invasion of Iraq, an act that led to his detainment by American forces and imprisonment at Camp Boka in southern Iraq. Some believe he was radicalized by jihadists from al-Qaeda while he was at Camp Boka, although he seems already to have been well on his way down the jihadist path at the time of his arrest. Accounts of Baghdadi's time at the U.S.-run prison, which was home to some 24,000 inmates and has been likened to a summer camp for ambitious terrorists, vary. It's not clear even which years he was imprisoned there. Some say he arrived at Camp Boka in 2004, others say 2005. Was he released in late 2004, 2006, 2009? Like everything surrounding him, it seems no one can say for certain. One associate, a man calling himself Abu Ahmed, who met Baghdadi at Camp Boka and later joined him in ISIS, has described the future caliph as, quote, someone important who had a, quote, charisma, but added that there were others who were more important. And this guy says, I honestly did not think Baghdadi would get this far. Still, Abu Ahmed says he got a feeling, and this is, quote, got a feeling from Baghdadi that he was hiding something inside, a darkness that he did not want to show other people. He was the opposite of other princes who were far easier to deal with. He was remote, far from us all. Baghdadi may have provided a chilling glimpse of his future plans when deemed no longer a threat. He was released from Camp Boka. Upon his departure, he told a group of U.S. troops, quote, I'll see you in New York. Now, you guys and gals may remember that statement. And it looks like his plans probably are to see, or his minions under ISIS do plan to see us in New York. And this guy, just one more thing about him. It says, Baghdadi, true to form, appears to have been intentionally inconspicuous during his time at Camp Boka. Today, although he is arguably the world's most infamous terrorist, he continues to shroud himself in mystery. Before he emerged in a Mosul mosque on July 5, 2014, that's just about a year ago, clad in black turban and black robes and declared himself caliph, there were only two grainy photographs of him known to exist. Dubbed, quote, the invisible sheikh, he almost never appears on video. During meetings with ISIS commanders, he reportedly wears a mask. One Raqqa man, now keep in mind, Raqqa, Syria, is the headquarters, that's the capital city of this caliphate that has been declared. One Raqqa man who was present at a mosque where Baghdadi made a rare public appearance described the scene. This is beginning of quote of the guy who was there. The minute he entered, the mobile coverage disappeared, says the 29-year-old resident of Raqqa, Syria, who asked to be identified only as Abu Ali. He recalled the flawless security on one occasion when Baghdadi entered a mosque. He says armed guards closed the area. The women were sent upstairs to the women's section to pray. Everyone was warned not to take photos or videos. It was the most nerve-wracking atmosphere. What made it more nerve-wracking is that when Baghdadi finally showed up, wearing black, head to toe, the guards started shouting, Allah Akbar, God is great. This made us even more scared, says Ali. The guards then forced us to swear allegiance to him. Even after Baghdadi left, none of us were allowed to leave the mosque for another 30 minutes. Now, the United States State Department, has placed a $10 million bounty on Baghdadi's head. Of course, he moves around often and stays incognito, so he's not like Bin Laden, who would put out tapes of himself every day or two. But they are in the Sinai now, and the news said yesterday they're just about to become a direct threat to Israel. I think what is happening, my opinion, I've talked before, you know, when Giuliani came home a few weeks ago and talked to Sean Hannity, he said there's about to be a huge war in the Middle East, and he thinks it'll probably turn nuclear. You have the countries of Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and Egypt that have been pro-Western, even though they're Muslim. The ISIS bunch, which of course is Sunni, just like they are, but they're a radical form of Sunni. They don't like that the Sunni those Sunni nations I just listed have done trade with the infidels, you know, the big Satan of the world, the United States. So ISIS is looking to control them. That's their goal, is to move into those nations and then on over into Israel. And, of course, these Sunni, more moderate nations, pro-Western nations, these like the King of Saudi Arabia and the King of Jordan, they don't want to be taken over by ISIS. So it's kind of making strange bedfellows. You've got the Shiite Iranians coming to fight ISIS, and a lot of it is being fought now, like in Yemen, and they're shooting missiles over into Saudi Arabia. So I guess what I'm saying is the Sunni ISIS bunch is after those nations. The Shiite Iranian bunch is after those nations. And by Bible prophecy, the Shiites will prevail because they're the ones listed in the Ezekiel account of being the ones that actually go after Israel. So right now, ISIS is on the rampage. In just 4 short months, they've taken over an area as big as Indiana. It's bigger than the British country, which Britain's mostly islands, but they have 35,000 square miles in their state. They've got trade, oil they're selling, and a lot of weaponry that they took as they ran the U.S. propped up government of Iraq out, got a lot of our weapons, have a lot of fancy Soviet weapons even that they've recovered going in there. So they're a well-equipped army. They have a head. They have land. Unlike some of these little terrorist organizations that didn't really, well, I guess Hamas has kind of controlled Gaza since George W. gave them Gaza. But never up until now has any of these terrorist groups really had a state of their own where they, controlled land and had all kinds of income. I think they're getting $30 million a day from their oil revenue, so they're not poor, and they can afford, if they don't steal the weapons, they buy weapons, and they claim now that they've got enough stuff to make a dirty bomb. Of course, we know Pakistan has the nuclear bomb, so Giuliani may be right. These two factions fighting for against each other, it may come down to nuclear. And in Isaiah 17 in the Bible, it talks about Damascus being laid waste overnight, like it's just nuked and blown off the, it says at evening, there's trouble, by morning it is not. It's just nuked overnight, blown off the map. Well, that sounds nuclear. And you keep in mind Syria is, for a lot of it's being fought out because Iran is in there trying to keep Assad's government up. You've got ISIS controlling half of the country, and it could be that one or the other nukes Damascus, just to get at the other one. So we're seeing Bible prophecy all come around. It's under the light now. It's understandable, all the things we've read for years and couldn't understand, how the United States could come down so easily and how this globalization could happen so easily and so quickly. The dominoes are falling so quickly. But now with the Shemitah year ending and, the blood moons, the final blood moon is here in September, if you follow that. The 14th of September is the Feast of Trumpets. The very day after the Shemitah year ends, you have the Feast of Trumpets, which is a biblical picture of the rapture of the church. I'm not saying it's going to happen that day, but I'm not saying it's not, so be ready. But, it could happen today. But, the fact that the Internet's being given to the UN, we're there. The global order with this Obama trade, they say, will be set up, this monstrous computer system that has the entire world in it. And whatever man is sitting at the helm of that you know, they can do what they want to. People can say, well, I've got lots of money, I'll make it. Well, the minute they seize the Wall Street wealth, or Wall Street falls, or the minute they seize bank accounts, freeze bank accounts, which, you know, read through history, that the bank account thing has come up before, you know, where they absconded gold even. But during the Depression, you know, the banks just basically defaulted. And I think we're going to see something that's a lot crazier than what went on then. And when people can't get to their money, that's why I said have food, have water, you know, have yourself just a few supplies. If you take medicine that's necessary to live, you know, insulin or those kind of things, have a little extra laid up. That's just advice from Aunt Jennifer, you know. But as I said, my topic when I started this morning, the world is about to change, and we are going to feel it. It's going to be a fast, harsh thing. And, you know, every day is going to bring something new in the news. And keep your eyes on Israel. As I said, as soon as they move on Israel, then the end is just falling. But this character that has declared this caliphate, you know, he's almost sounds like a prototype of an Antichrist-type guy. So it's on us. And with that, I know I've talked, a whole hour. So... hopefully I haven't blown your minds with too much information, but there's just so much happening. I think it's hard not to try to just share it, and you guys are out there on the road and have a chance maybe to share it with other people, and some people won't listen. Some people want to just look the other way, bury their head in the sand, and pretend it's not happening. But whether they believe it or not, it's happening. You know, these meetings, these treaties, these pacts or whatever you call them, trade agreements, are going through. You know, the Republicans have said it will be voted on again probably this week, and it's going to be law by July 4th is what they're saying. So you figure if we've got that by July 4th, we've got legalized homosexual marriage, the Supreme Court just about to vote on here in the next little bit, a lot of bad things are going to happen in the United States by the end of this Shemitah year. And Jonathan Kahn says nothing has to happen, but the pattern has been that something really bad does happen right after the close of the Shemitah. And I just encourage people to be ready. If you believe in the rapture of the church, which I do, I could see this being just as good a time as any, you know, to... just snatch the church out of here and let the total lawlessness abound, let the global system be set up, let whoever's going to control it rise and make his big peace treaties. And so I think time is short, and I would like for you guys to talk to me. Skip, if you want to unmute everybody.
All right, I'll open up the line here. Hold on. All right, line's open up there if anybody wants to comment on this.
Appreciate all that information this morning. That's a lot to you look at it. It's the same thing as almost hearing the sound of the trumpet getting ready, the way everything yeah. Looks like it's coming down, you know.
Well, you know what I played you, like 2 weeks ago, I played you those sounds that people have recorded where it sounds like the trumpet session section is getting warmed up. I'm telling you, there's strange things happening in the world, some things we just can't explain.
I was going to say, there's something about the third trumpet sound, and that's the third trumpet sound, that's it. So basically what you played is last week was two trumpet sounds, what we heard, and kind of, so... All we got to do is hear one more, huh? Maybe you take the sound that you was talking about there, and you put them out there like that, then you played us two different sounds last week. That third trumpet, it might be it. You know, there ain't no telling. Tomorrow morning about this time we may hear, come on home.
That would
down.
Be wonderful.
Be
oh, that'd be wonderful.
Amen.
So, You know, I believe, like a lot of people, I believe that there's enough prophecies already been fulfilled for it to happen. You know, and then everything's set in motion. So, you know, I think that basically what you told us this morning should encourage us to prepare ourselves, you know, and, you know, stock up a little food, stock up some water, you know. That way, if nothing else changes, if the world just changes a little bit and things will get a little harder to buy, then we're not in such a bad shape. You know, I've said for a long time that some of these people that had their houses and such high payments that they were going to pay off so soon and everything, if they had stocked food, they would have been able to keep their houses because they wouldn't have had to make the choice to buy food or to pay house payments, you know.
Right.
Preparation. The Bible talks about preparation, you know. It says, occupy till he comes. And basically, occupying till he comes in this day and time we live in, natural disasters that's happening and everything, it don't mean to get your guns and pour it up in the house, but it does mean to stock up some extra food. You're going to do a garden, can extra food and stuff like that. And just prepare, if for nothing else. You know, that's one thing I can say about Seventh-day Adventists and the Mormons and the Jehovah's Witness and being those religions that do that. So that's one thing I have to say. That's been a smart thing to do, you know.
Yeah.
And but you know, that don't mean I condone their whole religion. That means that one thing has been a smart thing to do, you know. And those particular religions live a lot off of bartering, you know. Mm-hmm. If the day and time we live in right now, if nothing else happens, if you can get into a bartering system, your life is fixing to get easier because it does more without money. And
right.
Just, you know, what our talents are. So basically what you're saying this morning kind of, excuse me, brings me back to that point that we need to roll our time the way we live and the way we pay attention to our brothers and sisters in Christ and not in Christ and help each other out. We need to roll that back towards the 40s, you know, mm-hmm. the late 30s, early 40s, and 50s, and start getting to know who your next-door neighbor is. And being willing to mow a little lady's yard down the street, you know, just because she may be a Jewish little lady with $40 million, but she don't have the health to do it, and she's too tired to do it. The blessing you give her today is the blessing God gives you tomorrow. And I think
agree.
We need to start doing that. But, you know, close your hand up and open it back up, and you see what you got in your hand, be nothing. That's what my opinion and my politics were.
Amen.
Somebody else, come on, somebody.
You know, the people that have told me, well, I've just put all my money in cash. You know, a lot of people are telling me that. I don't trust the banks. I don't trust the Wall Street game. And they have good reason not to trust those institutions, you know. We're getting warnings, subtle warnings, and they're becoming louder. But think about this. Say you go to the bank and you take out whatever you've got. I don't care if it's $1,000 or $1 million. If you take out over $10,000 in cash, I think they report you, but that's another topic. But say you go up there, you know, and you get whatever, and you may have a hoard of cash under your mattress or wherever, in your freezer, whatever. Well, this Obama trade passes, and they come up with a new currency, just like when the EU was set up and they come up with the euro. If they start saying, well, we're not trading dollars anymore, you know, just go ahead and burn those in your fireplace. We'll freeze your account up and figure out what you need. And, you know, Obama's already said, well, you only need so much. Well, of course, he and Michelle don't live that way, nor do the Clintons. But all those people want to tell us, you know, well, you personally need so much money. So they're going to find a way to go after private wealth, these families that have been saving for generations, you know, and have a lot of money in the bank. I think you're going to see that frozen. You're going to see it used to give it to whoever they want to give it to. And don't think they're going to just give it to the poor you know, the poor thinks, oh, that's fine, they'll hand us all that money. Well, no, actually, they've been telling them that to get their vote, but when the time comes down, they're going to pad their own pockets with it, you know.
Like,
the poor's not
like
going to do
Venezuela.
Much better off.
It's
so,
like
what's that, Curtis?
Well, dollar bills may be worth nothing, is what I'm saying.
Just like they've been doing that. You're talking about David Wilkerson, I think it was David Wilkerson, had a vision of that many years back when he was writing, books and everything, you know, quite a bit of. And he got one, and he said he had a vision of that. And he said he was walking down the street in front of the bank in laundry baskets, money was sitting there. Wasn't worth nothing. It was just there. You know, because they had changed the currency and one world currency and all that stuff.
Yep.
And basically, it was there, but it wasn't no good. Have all you wanted of it. Why? It's free, because it wasn't no good.
Yeah.
You know?
And we've seen that happen in a lot of countries, you know.
Yeah.
So, having a bunch of dollars under your mattress, you know, I would tell people, don't count on that. Obviously, I'm no prophet. I just know what I'm reading and hearing, and I just think that, you know, you can't eat money. You might could burn it for a little warmth, however long it lasted in your fireplace, but you know, the German housewives did that at the end of World War I, wasn't it? Literally burned it for kindling. But I think that people are smarter to have food and shelter. You know, even in a natural disaster like this big earthquake that happened in Nepal not too long ago, there have been people to go down there to try to help, and they send word back home and say, these people just want a tent to sleep under. They just want some food and water. You know, they've lost everything. I mean, you could have carried them a dollar bill or a piece of gold down there. It's not going to help them. You know, they want a tent over their head and something to put in their mouths and water to drink. And that's the way I think we need to think about it. And also, like I said, well, go medicine. You know, if you don't have a little medicine, if the trucks can't run or can't get stuff, or, you know, the money's no good and frozen up for a while until they can get you straightened out and know who's going to get what. And here again, Obamacare may just at that same point say, well, we've got to fix that too. And we just stretched it too thin, so we're going to have to cut back services. And I think you're going to see a lot of these people that they've counted on for votes that have just been sucking the system dry. They're suddenly just going to tell them, well, we just don't have it, you know, and that's when there's a lot of unrest going to happen, and they'll use that as an excuse to come in and militarize us, you know, just put people in their places where they want them. And I hope I'm wrong about some of it, but I don't think I am. I think that this has been a long time coming. You know, they've worked on this plan for, not centuries, but decades for sure. The progressives started in the early 1900s, and globalization. George H.W. was the first one, you know, that actually said it out loud, the New World Order. And so,
this has been in motion since World War II.
Yeah.
And it went up another gear. It was in motion before World War II. The Japanese said that next time that we go to war with America, we'll take them without a shot.
Yeah.
And you go
well,
look at who owns most of America now. We don't.
Right.
They do.
Well, and they've learned the pen is mightier than the sword, you know, these agreements and... The paperwork is what's going to get us this time as much as any bombs, I think. When they freeze your money and start just dictating to you what you're going to have, you know, what are you going to do about it? If they tell you, oh, well, dollars are no good. We've got this new currency, and you know, it's all electronic. It's all going to be put in your account, and you're going to do what they want you to do, or it's not going to be put there. And it's setting up the system that the Antichrist is going to run. You know, it's just the beta version of it.
They made it easier to accept, especially with the younger generation. How many movies that goes out now that you see them where they just go to an ATM machine and get credits for the money that they're going to spend? They don't get money. They get credits on a card,
yeah,
which is almost the same as your food stamp situation now.
Yeah.
They get credits on it because they're no longer using currency. See, and basically they're setting young people's minds up to this thing. So whenever you look at it, this has been in motion for a long time.
Yes, it has.
As far as what you're talking about now, where it's, but there's ways to live. That's why these people are learning to live off the grid. They're going to be the people that's not going to have a hard time with this. Because they're learning to live without electricity. They're learning to live without all the pleasantries that we have. And they believe it or not, your electric company is part of what you're talking about. Your water company is part of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Having control over people. You know.
Yep.
So when you start looking at it, you know, it's just like these sheriffs and all this stuff. You know, if you're going to devastate a country, all you got to do is take the dams out. And you won't only devastate a country. You'll destroy many, many, many lives.
Yeah.
You know. And so, you know, when you get into this stuff, you look at it, you see what's in motion. The thing about it is, we as Christians, if we wake up, start praying, and you give us knowledge today. And we need to start praying against this trade agreement. We need to start praying against these other things. People say, well, no way in the world is going to happen anyway. But it does make a difference because the Bible tells us we're supposed to be interested in it. And we're supposed to pray for our leaders. And we're supposed to pray against these things that's going on in our country. And if we'll start doing that, we may not see what we think we're fixing to see at this particular point in time. God can change the tide. If you don't believe it, go back and look at the Israelite children and see what happened when they turned back to God and started praying and started doing things right. He changed the tide. Not them, but he honored their prayers. And people say, well, there's no need to do it. It's just going to happen. It may happen. But if it happens with you on your knees, it's not going to be as hard as it is with you not on your knees unsuspecting.
Yeah. Amen.
But like I said, that's my politics. Look in your hand, you'll see what it's worth.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop the recording. I want to get this on CD, and we're about out of time on the recording time. But don't go nowhere, Jennifer.
Okay.
I want to thank you for joining us here this morning. Standing Hand of God Highway Ministries. If you got any questions about the line, or you're interested in more messages by Jennifer or any of the other people we have on, we have a host of them, different CDs and things. You're welcome to those. Just give us a call at 816-729-6649, or you can write us at P.O. Box 136, Bay City, Missouri, 64011. We also have a playback number, and this is 605-562-0029 with access code of 812-193-714. And this is recording number 90. You're welcome to listen at any time, share with anybody else, family, friends, pass on to other people with other messages on there as well. Thanks for joining us, and God bless.
Amen.